Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Nintendo Fever podcast. This is episode 21. I'm your host, Holly Felmuth, and I'm joined today by Matt Desend.
Hello, hello.
And Bradley Cragen.
Howdy there, folks.
So today we have a bit of a special episode for you. We're going to be talking about some of our usual things, recent swag and what we've been playing. We're going to be doing our halfway marker, basically, on Metroid Prime for our Game of the Month club. July is Metroid Prime, as many of you probably know, so we're going to be just kind of giving a halfway report on that game. And today we have for you a very special feature. We're going to be talking about just some of our favorite Nintendo memories in honor of Satoru Iwata, who passed away way too young at 55, completely unexpected. So we really just wanted to, you know, talk about his legacy and the things that we love most about this company that he has spearheaded for so long. So we will get to that in a little while. So let's talk about, first actually, I want to let y'all know who won the giveaway for Zakisaw's Last Stand. We had two codes of that game to give away. This game is on Wii U, and these codes again are only for North America, and our winners are Mike Fulham and Daniel Fugit. So all you had to do to enter again was just to talk to us on Twitter or send us an email with comments or questions for us to talk about. And this week we got a good little comment from Amiibro, one of our loyal listeners. He actually, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time discussing this, he says, I was hoping one of you guys would mention World of Goo for awesome soundtrack, because last week, of course, we talked about our favorite video game soundtracks and songs. So does anyone want to comment on this? Like, I haven't really played World of Goo significantly.
I played the demo of World of Goo. That was when I didn't really buy a ton of, like, WiiWare games or, you know, like, kind of, like, downloadable games and stuff like that. I always heard it was really good, and I always kind of wanted to play it. I did download the demo for it, and I thought it was fun. And the soundtrack is very cool. It's, like, so, man, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's just like, you know, it's very like happy, but like dark at the same time. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that game's kind of moody.
Yeah, very emo.
Yeah.
I only played the demo on WiiWare. I don't remember the soundtrack, so can't really comment on it.
Yeah, I can comment on the Little Inferno soundtrack, which came from the same guys, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Cool. Well, I love the Little Inferno soundtrack, so there you have it.
It's similar to that. I mean, not like similar in the sense of like it's the same thing, but like you can tell that it's the same game company, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so actually, I mean, I told Amiibro, I replied to his tweet and let him know that there were like, after we recorded last episode, I thought to myself like, oh my gosh, I should have mentioned that. And the big one that I want to bring up that I really should not have missed was the Fire Emblem Awakening soundtrack.
Considering you're such a big fan of it, I'm surprised you would forget that.
Yeah, I know. But the music, I remember when I first played through that game, and literally that music was like seared into my brain for like months and months and months.
Well, when you do something for 300 hours, Holly, usually it becomes a part of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Admittedly, yes, that's true. But it is a great soundtrack. I'm really looking forward to Fire Emblem Fates music. Which I think a lot of it you could probably find online already, but I don't want to be spoiled. So excited for that game and that soundtrack. So yeah, there's, man, you know, you just can't get to all the good ones in like
there's
what?
Too many.
However long that we had, which wasn't very long, so. But thanks everyone for entering. Again, our winners were Mike Fulham and Daniel Fugit. And so when this podcast episode comes out, which will probably be Monday morning, we will definitely send you guys tweets.
Don't say that, Holly. Don't say Monday morning, because the last time you did that, you jinxed yourself.
Yeah, I guess I did. Last week, I'm sorry about the podcast being so late, but like maybe an hour and a half or so after finishing the recording is when we all found out about Iwata passing away. So yeah, you can't blame me. It's all I'm saying. Okay, so let's talk about our recent swag. Anything interesting this week, Matt?
So this week has been kind of a short week for us, obviously. We're recording a little bit earlier than we normally do, but this week I've been kind of busy, and I was unable to really pick up anything for recent swag. I am looking into getting a Super Mario Galaxy CD off of eBay, because they're actually not that badly priced. So hopefully within the coming weeks I'll be a proud owner of a Mario Galaxy original soundtrack here very shortly. But yeah, so no recent swag on my end, at least.
All right, Bradley, anything interesting?
Well, my Bowser amiibo finally came in the mail, and it's awesome. It's really well detailed. It's probably one of my favorite amiibo I have so far. It's like really heavy, it's big, and well detailed. I love his spiny shell. It's really awesome.
And it is the Super Mario edition, right?
Yes.
I think the Smash Brothers amiibo of Bowser is actually even way more detailed. I mean, because it's like that the scary, you know, fighter version of him and stuff like that. Uh-huh. But it just, to me, it looks way more detailed compared to the Super Mario edition of it, too. So who knows? Maybe that will be something you get doubles of just so you can kind of compare.
Yeah, maybe. And that's about it.
Okay. Amiibo's always good, like we mentioned last week. This week I got in the mail just this little, okay, I don't remember where I saw an ad for this, but dang, I saw an ad for this and I had to get it. It's this little hardbound Legend of Zelda themed journal. So it's pretty awesome. It's really well put together. Like I say, it's hardbound, so it's got a nice hard cover that you can, like, you know, knock on. It's got a little strap that wraps around it so that you can keep it closed. And on the strap, there's actually this cool little Hylian shield emblem. So, and it's pretty legit. It's like metal, it's nice and heavy, so it's got some, you know, substantialness to it. So I'm really happy about that. I've started writing in it. I love to write, and a lot of people have kind of forgotten that this exists, but yes, you can actually, like, grab a pencil and paper and, you know, like, write down words with your hand, believe it or not. So I still love doing that.
What are you talking about? I'm really, really confused right now.
This is like old school.
Caveman stuff.
Do you use like some sort of like writing utensil?
Yeah. Actually, I mentioned pencil, but I'm actually a big fan of the pen.
What is that?
What are you talking about? I'm older than you and I'm confused.
Writing some Zelda fanfics?
Nope, not in my case. I actually wrote about Metroid Prime last night. I just thought I'd make it kind of my, you know, video game journal. So.
Oh, okay.
Very cool.
Because I love writing about video games. And again, I do like to handwrite stuff a lot still. I like all kinds of writing. And so it's just a really cool little piece of swag that I got. And I may just post a picture on Twitter. We'll see. Because I got, you know, I've got tons of, you know, green colored Zelda swag. And putting it all together in like this nice little picture would be all like, yeah, Zelda fan right here. So that's me.
You know, Nintendo has always done a good job, I feel, at least, of having some pretty cool, you know, not like swag type, you know, stuff. Like, I've always wanted to get like the Nintendo Monopoly type game or like the Jenga Donkey Kong game. Like, they do a decent job, I feel, with licensing out their stuff. And it was at the beginning of this year that I remember Nintendo saying that they were going to try and, you know, really do a good job at licensing out their material for things that like seemed very appropriate for the licensing and stuff like that. And I feel like for the most part, they've always done a decent job like that. I mean, it's not too often that you go to the store and you see like Mario O's, you know, but I think like a journal and stuff's pretty cool. I've always wanted to get a Hyrule Historia. Have you ever, do either one of you own that or anything?
I got that day one, man. That was an easy choice.
Yeah, I have it.
I've missed out on it. You know, I've always been a big Nintendo fan. I've never been the biggest Zelda fan. Like, just call me crazy. It's okay. I like the games, but like, I did not jump on that when I should have jumped on that. That was just something I looking back, I would have got it just for my collection, you know, and sometimes I think too emotionally. I'm like, oh, well, I can do without. But then I look back and I'm like, man, I definitely can't do without that.
Well, is it expensive now?
Yeah, I was about to say, is it actually, you know, pricey nowadays?
Well, I don't know.
I got mine for like $25 or something.
Yeah, I think that was the normal price for it.
You know, the week after things stop being new, I'm always like, what's going on in the world of anything? I don't know. Oh, $17. Okay, well, it turns out I'm buying one right now.
All right, that's pretty awesome. It's a great book. Very well put together.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yep. Anyway, I actually seem to remember it knocking 50 Shades of Grey off of the number one spot on Amazon.
Oh, really?
Me. So go Hyrule Historia. Way to sell.
Way to sells.
Yep. Okay, so let's talk about what we've been playing. I hope we've all been playing Metroid Prime. We did discuss it a little before the show, and we decided that since Bradley has not gotten that far into the game, he would talk about it first.
Before we go into Metroid Prime, if there's anything else anyone has been playing, I feel like we should talk about that just very briefly, because that's going to be kind of the meat of the podcast. Or not the meat, but just like a look, because I guess all I'm trying
potatoes?
To say is I want to talk about, yeah, the potatoes. I just really want to talk about Tiny Galaxy.
Okay.
Go for it.
Yep.
I just want to say that Tiny Galaxy is out. Hop onto your Nintendo Wii U, go to the eShop, type in Tiny Galaxy, download it, buy it. I offered a promotion for the first 5 people who sent me a picture of them playing the game. Then I sent them a free digital soundtrack. I'm also selling the soundtrack as well, a physical copy that you can hold in your hand. I made a little booklet. I made a printed on CD. I made a nice little case for it. I tried to go the extra mile and make sure that it looked nice and professional. And I'm selling those for $13 with a game code. If you buy it like with a game code included, or you can just buy the physical CD by itself for me for $10. Or you can get the digital version of it on the Google Play Store for $5. But the game itself, I personally think it's a lot of fun. It's deceptively simple, I feel. It's a little bit more difficult than you might first think it's going to be. Think like Super Meat Boy meets a 2D version of Mario Galaxy. Not in the sense of like, you know, platforming are these huge sprawling levels, but I mean, you are jumping from planet to planet using gravity to kind of move your body around. It's a very fun game, in my opinion. I think the soundtrack's good, but I'm totally biased. I think that everyone should at least look at it and check it out and consider picking it up, because I think it's worth it. And I think that you listeners will enjoy it. And also, if you do pick it up, let me know what you think about it. And if you're interested in picking up a physical CD, also contact me as well, and I'll get those sent out to you just as quickly as possible. But, you know, I think Tiny Galaxy is a blast to play. But that's me, and I'm totally biased, and I totally admit that.
Okay, well, I actually last week kind of promised that I'd give you my honest opinion on the soundtrack.
Uh-oh.
And my honest opinion is that I really like it. I really tried to push last week's episode because we did include 2 Tiny Galaxy themes. So, and, you know, I wanted to push that so that people could hear that music, because I really, really enjoyed it. It was actually, I mean, I listened to the, I think there's 12 tracks total, or 11?
11, yeah. Remember.
Okay, 11 tracks. Which is pretty good for an indie game of this size. So I listened to them all and actually had quite a difficult time choosing which ones I wanted to put at the beginning and the end of the podcast. But I picked some pretty good ones, and I really like the soundtrack. So I hope all of our listeners do too.
Yeah, so please go and check it out. You can hop onto Google Play and do like the little, you know, preview of each song, so you can kind of hear what they sound like and stuff. Or just check out the, you know, the trailers for the game Tiny Galaxy. Honestly, I think it's worth your time. It's a $6 game, $5.99, 60 levels of awesome fun, difficult platforming, challenging, but it's that kind of challenging. I feel that once you like beat a level, you have that sense of like accomplishment, and you don't ever have to go back to a level unless you want to. Like, you beat a level, you get 3 stars, and you move on to the next one. There's not like any of this like this crazy stuff where it's like, hey, you didn't collect all 120 amulets, so you don't get the other part of the game. Like, you just play through it from start to finish, and to me, it's a very cohesive package that has a good amount of difficulty with challenge and fun just, like, intertwined together. But hey, that's just me.
Okay, there you have it. I've played it a little bit myself. I also have enjoyed it. I do have one issue with it. The only thing... Okay,
the level select?
Yes, it is! The level
yeah,
select.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, me and Taylor are very, very fully aware of it. We completely agree with every bit of criticism and anger that it causes. My biggest piece of advice is start at level 1 and work your way to level 10, and don't skip any levels.
Because it doesn't. The problem with it is that it doesn't tell you like what you've completed or not completed.
It doesn't tell you, other than by telling you like how many stars you have, but that doesn't matter. Like, if you skipped from level 1 to level 5. You wouldn't know that you kind of forgot levels 2, 3, and 4. It was because when Taylor first started programming it, and he's very open about this, it was his first game, and he started from scratch with the code. And when he started from scratch with the code, he built everything off of the beginning of the code. So if he was going to try and change anything in the code now, what would happen is he would have to basically rewrite all of the code after that. So I asked him, I said, is there any way you could add a bit of code into it? And he said, the problem with adding the code is I would have to then add it to every additional piece of code. So it's sadly not an easy fix. We are looking into it. If there's a way to patch it and update it, we totally want to, because we know the criticism. We know that it's a problem. We released it knowing that that was going to, it's wonky, you know, and I'm glad that it doesn't affect you playing the levels, you know. It does annoy me, and it is an annoying thing, especially because here's the one nice thing about it is you can't move on to the next world until you beat all the stages in the previous world. So it's not like you can get like 5 worlds ahead of yourself and then all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh, did I skip a world or did I skip a level? You know, you still have to go through each world and beat each stage in that world, but it is a little annoying when you don't know that you previously beat a level when there should be some sort of indication of it. We completely agree with you. Completely.
So that's just our, you know, advice from us to you listeners. Be sure to go through every single level. It does give you the option to, you know, like skip a level or, you know, pick whatever level in world one or world two that you want. But definitely just go through them in order and use that star count to figure out or to, you know where you're at. Because you do have to collect 3 stars in each level before you can actually complete the level itself. So,
were you able to get to a boss fight?
I was not. Not yet.
Okay. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the boss fights, because I actually really enjoy the boss mechanics that he has, that we have in the game. And I like the song that was chosen for the boss world and stuff like that. So I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on it.
All right. We'll have to talk more about that next week. But for now, let's get a little bit of Metroid Prime out of the way. So Bradley,
yes,
you're on.
So yeah, I've only played the beginning part where you, I don't know what planet it is. I think it's some pirate planet, and you go through it, defeat a boss, and then
I believe it's actually just a spaceship.
A spaceship?
Yeah, it's okay. I think it's known as a frigate, which is a type of ship, so I'm not exactly sure what kind of ship, but thanks Shakespeare class for teaching me that word.
There's like a ton of stuff that you can like scan and get a bunch of information about all these mutations that are going on, and yeah, it was interesting. It's you have to get used to it, the controls a little bit, but it was fun.
Okay. So when I very first tried out the game, I had like a huge problem figuring out, because the game doesn't quite explain it very well, how to switch from your normal visor to the scan visor.
Yes. I had a problem with that too. I finally figured it out though.
On your own? I think I had to look it up actually.
Yeah, you have to like point upwards toward the scanner mode.
Yep, while holding the minus button.
Yes. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I wish it was a toggle instead of, like, a hold.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a thing with, like, you know, switching the type of arm cannon that you use. And so, you know, it could be a little more user-friendly that way. But especially, okay, later on in the game, you're fighting tons of enemies. And sometimes you have to switch between different, like I say, arm cannons. And yeah, that can be a bit of a pain. You have to hold the plus button and point in the direction, like left, right, up, down, whatever, you know, cannon it is you're looking for. You have to point to that, then let go of the button, and then your arm cannon, you know, shifts. And that's how it is again with the scanner visor as well, so.
I guess that's just because of the Wii remote, just kind of, I don't know.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on the presentation so far?
Looks decent. I mean, it's a Wii game, so it's not like the most beautiful thing in the world, but it's decent.
Did anybody here like play the GameCube game?
So I still own my GameCube version of it. Well, I bought a GameCube version of it, so I actually played the first pirate ship on that, just because I wanted to kind of see what it was like and stuff. And you know, it's different, but it's similar. It didn't get but it didn't get like upped all that much. You know what I mean? Like it's not this giant graphical leap between GameCube to Wii, which is kind of disappointing. I don't know. It reminded me personally that it's like, oh, this is just a, you know, the GameCube 1.5, basically.
Yeah.
It would have been cool if they did it for like a remake for the Wii U instead of the Wii. And
it would
have like HD graphics and stuff.
All I can think about when I play this game, because it still looks good, right? I mean, I still think it's a very good-looking game. But there is a lot of parts where I watch it, where I'm playing it, and I'm like, this would look so... It reminds me of going from Mario Galaxy, which was a beautiful game, and then playing Super Mario 3D World, which is a stunning game. Like, they have that same kind of jump between, you know, Mario Galaxy to Super Mario 3D World, between like Mario or Metroid Prime to Metroid Prime on the Wii U would have been outrageous. It would have been so cool.
Yeah, it's just, it's really fuzzy when you're playing the old school games, like Super Mario Galaxy now.
Yep. It is noticeable. I played the Wii U when I first got the Wii U. I played it, you know, obviously for several weeks, and then I went over and played a new Super Mario Bros. Wii. Oh my gosh, that game looked horrible.
that game never looked good.
Yeah, I guess that is true. There are some Wii games that look pretty dang good. I think Skyward Sword is really pretty.
Yeah.
And Metroid Prime is still a good-looking game, though. It is.
Yeah, it's about the art style, I think.
Yeah, the art style really stands out, I thought.
Okay. So, Matt has gotten a little bit further than Bradley, so we were going to kind of move on to his point of view, because he's a little further in the game. So do you have anything to add, Matt?
Yeah, sounds like I'm about an hour ahead of you, maybe a little bit more. I have the Morph Ball and the Morph Ball Bombs. And last night I was playing it because I knew we had to get on for this, and I was like, I got a really good groove going, right? Like, first I unlocked the missile, and then right after the missile, I was able to go and find the morph ball. And then right after the morph ball, I was like, oh yeah, I gotta go back this way. And then when I went back that way, I got the morph ball bombs. And I was like, oh yeah, that means I can blow this thing up. And I went back over here. And it just reminded me why Metroid Prime or Metroidvania, Metroid games are so much fun. It's this like giant world that's a puzzle that you are actively solving. It's so cool. It's Zelda to a point, because that's how Zelda is a little different, because you go to a dungeon, then you leave that dungeon, and then you go to a different dungeon. This is more like one dungeon that you're kind of continuously exploring and unlocking things. But like, just that idea of like, you get this so you can go do this is so much fun, right? That's what makes these games like entertaining. It makes them enjoyable. And when you can get yourself on a rhythm where you just know that you're supposed to go from A to B to C to D to D to E, like, all of a sudden you're like, oh man, I feel like I'm like video game Jesus. You know, it's amazing. It's so much fun.
That actually makes design like a really touchy, not touchy, but like sensitive thing. And I think Retro Studios really, really nailed the design in Metroid Prime. You never feel like overly lost. Like, well, I do remember that, you know, this weapon is going to open up that door or that pathway, but I don't know where that is. You never really feel lost, and the game does give you little pushes from time to time saying like, hey, in this sector there's some, you know, weird seismic activity going on, please, you know, like, investigate. So,
and I agree with all of that except for when you hit a wall. And that happened to me last night, and maybe it's because I was tired, I don't know. I was playing it pretty late, but I hit a wall, literally. I got to a place where I'm like, I don't know what to do to get past this wall. And then I decided to just do it, to go to the FAQ. That's what I was okay with doing it. So I went up to the part that I was at, and I was like, what do I do at this part? And it gave me a hint. I just read up to the point where I was like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. So I know exactly how to get past that part now. And I'm like, oh, how did I not think to scan? You know what I mean? Like, when you are stuck at a part in Metroid Prime, it's probably best to scan everything around you and then figure out what you're supposed to do. That's what I'm kind of learning, I guess, by trial and error. And the other thing that I noticed is the map is okay, but it's not really good, I think.
It's a little difficult to move it around.
Wonky.
Sometimes I hold the Z button, which allows you to, like, pan as opposed to rotate the map, and sometimes for some reason I don't think my finger is, you know, like, crapping out or anything. It just goes back into the rotation mode, and I'm all like, I was holding Z. So it's a little bit frustrating sometimes, but,
and it's a little difficult to read. I think it looks cool, and I think they went with something like cool stylized more than like useful, which is like anti-Nintendo usually, but, you know, this
anti-Metroid too. Usually Metroid maps are super slick.
But, you know, I got lost one time besides, like, getting stuck at this wall where I knew I had to blow up this part with the morph ball bombs. And I was like, where is that part at? And I literally walked around for at least 10 minutes trying to figure out where this part was. And then I like, as I was like jumping off this cliff, I'm like, oh, there it is. And I like ran over and like did everything really quickly. It was the sense of like, discovery in Metroid is just so strong, I feel. And, I'm really enjoying it and I can't wait to play more of it. Like now I'm in that mood where it's like, I know what to do. I know where to go. All I want to do is go play it some more.
Okay. So I am further than both of you at this point, by a few hours at least, I'd say. I've reached a couple of new areas. I don't want to give them away just yet, but when you mentioned, Matt, that it's like Zelda, but it's almost just like one big dungeon, one big puzzle that you're solving. That is true, but just so you listeners know who haven't played the game, that's not to say that there's no variety, especially in the environments in this game, so... don't worry about that. Plenty of variety there. There are really cool boss fights. And here's a tip. When in doubt, like scan, especially in a boss fight.
Yes.
So scanning is so useful in this game. Plus, it really is kind of a part of the atmosphere of the game. Going in and like scanning these creepy, cryptic space pirate messages is kind of, you know, like, ooh, that's creepy. They're like experimenting on these creatures, mutating them and making them all deformed and stuff like that. And so scanning is actually a pretty, and if you want 100% this game, you've got to scan like everything, just so you know.
Yeah, I gave up on that like after like the first 10 minutes when like I forgot to scan something, and I knew that I would have to, I knew that I wasn't going to get a chance to scan it again because I had heard somewhere that you're not able to like rescan things after you go past certain parts for certain items. So it's like, I'll never get this. So I'm like, well, I don't care. I'm just going to scan what I have to scan.
Yeah. I think that's the way most people are, but
yeah, I was like scanning everything.
I am not a crazy 100%er because if I got to the end of it and I only, and I realized like,
you
I
got
missed
99%
because like, oh
you forgot
gosh.
To scan this or that.
I would be so angry.
You know, I actually, one of my favorite songs in the game is the Flagra. There's a boss called Flagra. And one of my favorite songs from the game is that boss fight. And I was watching it on YouTube and reading the comments, and someone was all like, okay, so I got to the end of this game and I, you know, scanned everything, but I didn't get 100% because of one little thing. Flagra tentacle or something like that. So...
oh,
yeah, it can be kind of frustrating. Personally, right now, my playthrough is all about trying to speed through it based on my own previous experience. But yeah, I've gotten, like you, Matt, I've actually gotten stuck a few times despite the fact that I've beaten the game before. But the magical thing about this game is that even when you're like stuck and you're just wandering around kind of aimlessly, it's still fun. Just exploring and walking around and fighting enemies is just fun. I don't know what it is. It's mostly the atmosphere, I think. I could just, like, spend forever.
It's fun to a certain extent. I mean, there is a part, I feel, where as you're playing, if you don't know what it is you're supposed to be doing, it becomes tedious. I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts on... So the atmosphere is good, right? I think we can all agree that the atmosphere feels pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at some points the atmosphere becomes tedious when, like I said, you kind of hit a wall... and you know you have to go back because everything does have like its own like environmental look, but there's very few sometimes, I feel like to a point, there's sometimes not good indications to remind you that you've already gone down this hallway and you can't go any further because you don't have this thing. And I know part of that should just be me remembering, obviously, but at the same time, like I feel like it is a fun atmospheric game. But I think sometimes even the atmosphere is just kind of like, okay, I get it. It's dark and brooding. I just want, you know, to keep going. I want to, what's next? Where do I go next? And sometimes it feels like I can't do that the way that I want to do that. I don't know.
I can see that. Definitely. Kind of depends. I think that will pretty much cover our halfway through July. I mean, it's way past half. Well, you know, today is the 17th. The podcast will probably be coming out on the 20th. So it's a little past halfway at this point, but that's okay. I just wanted to be past the 15th when we talked about that. So anyway, we'll talk about more about Metroid Prime at the end of the month. You know, like I say, you guys can enter our next giveaway, and I'm going to reveal the game that we'll be giving away at the end of the podcast. You can enter, like
it's
I
a good
say.
One.
Yeah, it
yes,
is.
It is. A great one.
Yep. So, and you know what? The giveaways are only going to get progressively better, I feel. So, look forward to that.
There's going to be something very tiny in the future.
Hint, hint.
Oh.
Anyway, so, one of the things that you can send us in an email, though, to enter our giveaways, or, you know, send us in a tweet, whatever the case may be, is ideas for future Game of the Month Club games for us. We've already talked a little bit about playing The Legend of Zelda Minish Cap for it, because I don't think any of us have really played that one, and, it's really well praised, but I don't think it's widely played, sadly. So that's just one option. Let us know what some of your picks might be, and we will enter you into our giveaways. But now we're going to be moving on to our very special feature, just talking about Nintendo memories that we have in honor of Satoru Iwata. So, anyone, Matt, since you're clearly the oldest.
Clearly?
I'm just kidding.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know what that means.
It means that you sound the most professional on the podcast. I think everyone knows it, so.
What?
It's a compliment. Just trust
me.
You can start by telling us some of your early to middle to like kind of recent memories of Nintendo, things that you remember fondly about the company.
Things that I remember fondly is just growing up playing Nintendo. The very first time I can actually remember playing a Nintendo game was Super Mario Brothers 3. We used to go to this lady used to babysit me and my brothers, and she was a Hispanic lady. And my whole family, I'm half Hispanic. My mom's full Mexican. I don't look at it all. I'm very white, but I never really learned a ton of Spanish. But we would get dropped off at this lady's house, and she didn't speak great English. I didn't speak great Spanish, but she had a Nintendo. So for a couple of hours out of the week when my mom would drop me off there it wasn't very long, but it was very, very rarely this happened. But when it did happen, I remember sitting there and just playing Mario Brothers 3 all the time. That was my very first. That's the very first memory I can really fully think about and say, like, that's when I played a Mario game or Nintendo. And then it just kind of catapulted from there. We owned systems. My older brother's 7 years older than me, and he always had, like, a Nintendo or a Super Nintendo. So we were always playing video games, you know, with him and stuff. I remember I lived with my grandma for a little while when I was a little bit older. I was probably 10, maybe about there. And I moved in with my grandma for a little bit when I say move in, we lived in Burley, and then I went to Oakley with my grandma, and that was like 20 minutes away. And it's just because we're kind of like in a transitional period, but I was there anyways. So after school from there, because she was working, I would go over to this other place, another, you know, babysitter, and they had a Super Nintendo, and they had Killer Instinct. And that was my first time playing a fighting game. Woo!
That
loved
game's
me.
On the N64, right?
Super Nintendo.
Super Nintendo, which you already said. Gosh.
Yes. Oh, man. It
was Game Boy.
So much I know.
I think everywhere at this point, almost. Except for Nintendo now. Weird how that happens. Yeah. Anyways, I loved it. I loved Killer Instinct at the time. It was so cool. And I remember that was like my first fighting game. And then I fell in love with Street Fighter. We had Street Fighter Alpha 2 for our Super Nintendo. And I know that it's like considered not a good game. But I loved it, so I don't know what people are talking about because they're crazy, because I'm not crazy.
Well, I thought there were like, obviously there are multiple versions of Street Fighter 2 on the Super Nintendo, but I didn't think there was much difference between them. Like, what's
this
the difference
one,
in Alpha?
So this is Street Fighter Alpha 2. This is actually
Alpha.
Completely... Yeah, this is
oh,
not...
Oh, dear me.
It's not Street Fighter 2, it's Street Fighter Alpha 2.
Okay, that's
at least
difference.
I'm pretty sure that's the version that we played. I know there's like Alpha... Maybe Alpha and Alpha 2, maybe that's all I'm thinking of. But we had the Super Nintendo game that was whatever with the guy that had like the big metal armor, and he was yellow and blue, and he had like the things that Raphael uses to fight people. And I just remember loving that game. I got so good at it. It was just so much fun, especially because I played that game with my brothers all the time. You know, that was the one of those fighting games that we would pass the controller around for hours and play. And then going backwards just a tiny bit, my very first like Nintendo game that I remember beating is Kirby. Kirby for the NES is my favorite Nintendo game because it's the first game I personally remember beating. I remember that nostalgic feeling to it. I remember just like, I remember falling in love with playing video games at that point, especially when I beat it. And I just like, oh my gosh, like these things have like this ending, and there were so many stages in Kirby. It was just this big realized world. And then, you know, many years later, I found out that Iwata actually worked on Kirby. And that's awesome. Yep. Like, that's such a cool little come around circle thing where, you know, sometimes I think we forget like how much of a game designer he actually was. He worked on a lot of stuff, and Kirby was one of those, you know, darlings. And I just think that was awesome. Let's see,
Oh, I was going to say, like, you talking about Street Fighter Alpha 2 or whatever that was kind of made me think, like, are there games that we played when we were younger that we played, you know, later on, like more recently, and realized, like, wow, that game is a lot worse than I remember it.
Yes, there's games like that for sure, like Adventures of Lolo. I don't know if you guys know what that one is. That's an old HAL Laboratory game.
I've heard good things about it.
I didn't like it at all. I don't like that game, personally. Okay. But
you liked it when you were little?
I thought it was okay. Or I'd never played it when I was little, but I heard about it. I guess that's not a good one for that, because I'd heard about it, that it was good, and I played it, and I didn't like it. So maybe that's not a good example of what we just talked about.
Is there anything that you can think of, Bradley, by any chance?
I played Donkey Kong 64 a little bit recently, and that's not very good.
I've heard some okay things about that game.
Yeah, it doesn't really age that well.
Yeah, especially, it's just a very, like, Nintendo 64-looking game. Mario Kart 64 is not that good.
Mario Kart 64?
Yeah, call me crazy. Mario Kart 64 is not as good as you remember it.
Huh. That is a very good
Except the battle mode, right?
I mean, yeah, it's okay, but, like, the game itself is super stuttery. Like, the frame rate is not solid. It does not look very good. It's not as good as I feel people remember that game being. It's still a good game. Don't get me wrong. Don't hate me, Internet. It's a great game. It's just not as good as you remember. Better Mario Kart games have come out.
I have to agree with that a little bit, actually. I mean, literally the only reason that I go back and play that is for nostalgia's sake and for my siblings who refuse to be open and play Mario Kart 8. Oh my gosh, what an amazing game.
Yet
they're always all like, well, let's go back and play the one that we used to play growing up. I'm all like, okay. Only reason I play that game anymore. So
I just want to state, so that's kind of like my pre-memories. My newest bit of memories about Nintendo that I just want to bring up is, now that I do have kids, my oldest daughter, she's 8 years old now. We've been playing a lot of video games together as she gets older. We started out by playing, the very first game that we played with each other was like Super Mario Galaxy. She played as, you know, the two-player mode and stuff like that, which was a lot of fun for her because she just liked, you know, picking up the star bits. But we beat together New Super Mario Brothers U. We beat together Super Mario 3D World. There's a really cool little indie game called It'll Do, which was like a super bite-sized version of like a Legend of Zelda type game. And we played it together, but I kind of let her take the reins on it, and she was able to beat that game basically by herself. Like, I helped her with like battles, but she figured out puzzles. And we just played that together, and it's been a really cool experience to me grow up with video games and then to be there as, you know, and play video games with my daughter. And that's been something that I feel like I'm grateful for Nintendo to have that ability to do that with. And I feel like staying up all night to get my Wii when I did that, and then like getting my Wii U and like having my daughter be older now, like, it's just been a very, like, full circle type realization of, like, the reason why I like to play video games. Like, I don't do it personally for, like, escapism, like I know some people kind of do. I do it for entertainment, enjoyment, and now I'm also doing it partly for family time.
That's nice.
So, I guess I'm probably next in line in terms of age. I was born right around the time that the Super Nintendo came out. So Super Nintendo and N64 were the big systems that I really grew up with. We did actually, I feel like we had an NES, but only off and on for some reason. Like, we'd get like one on eBay and then it would die or whatever. Just with family for the most part. For me, it was way more family than friends because I've got a lot of older siblings, a couple of younger ones too. And we just always were into video games and playing them together. Mario Party 2 for the N64 is one that I remember playing a lot. I'm trying to think. Super Mario World, despite the fact that I tend to, you know, kind of side with Donkey Kong Country now, as many of you know, Super Mario World is a huge, huge part of my childhood. And if I had to say that if I had to try and pick the game that I first beat, it probably is Super Mario World. But again, I don't really know. You kind of forget about what happened back then. I don't even know what game was the first that I played.
How did we, when we were younger, like, how did we know the secrets? Do you remember this, Holly? Like, and Bradley, like, did you guys, like, did you learn how to, like, I don't know, like, there's a secret in the Boo Castle, the very first Boo, you know, a haunted house that you go to, where if you, like, I can't remember where
it's at. You get a running start, but you go, like, so you go to the right for, you know, like, until the first gap, I guess, and then you turn around and get a nice running start, and you kind of have to have the feather as well.
Yeah.
Get a nice running start in the other direction, and then you just fly straight up at the very beginning of the level.
Yeah, yeah.
Super secret.
How did we know that?
I don't remember.
Don't know.
Do you remember, like, there's secrets in games that, like, we just knew existed, and I don't fully remember how I learned about them. And now it's funny, like, I play, like, Mario games, and, like, I just know that, you know what, there's going to be a secret, like, right here. And half the time I'm right about it, you know, and it's just like, how did these, like, secrets become, like, etched into, like, the way that we play video games? Kind of funny, I guess.
Well, back in the day, I think it was a group effort. I think that's part of the reason.
Very true. My brother probably told me, my older brother probably told me, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I know that, I mean, I don't think I ever beat Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time on my own, technically. I think I was pretty much taught how to beat that game by a friend of mine. So yeah, again, back in the day, video games were a real group effort, and they were really tough. So you needed that input from your family and friends to get through them. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no walkthroughs on the internet.
Nope.
No internet at the time. A very, very young internet that was not legal at all.
Yeah.
That actually kind of makes me think, this isn't Nintendo, but Warcraft 2. I watched my sister play that game and loved it. Loved just watching it, interestingly. So, obviously, Ocarina of Time is a big one for me as well, that I grew up with.
Yeah.
As far as kind of more recent goes, I kind of, my high school years, I guess you could say, were all about the Wii. Not even really the DS for me, because I feel like I didn't get a DS until a little later. So it was mostly for me the Wii. The Wii has a very special place in my heart, and I think that's a great system, personally. I know a lot of hardcore gamers, you know, frown upon it or whatever. It's got a lot of pretty hardcore experiences on it. Plus, it's got the casual stuff. It's got a really great spectrum of games. And so,
yeah.
And Iwata was obviously president during that time, and so I feel like we owe a lot to him for that as
well.
We
do. I think that, we owe the Wii and the DS because I there's a quote out there somewhere, but like, he is the reason why the DS took the shape that it took. He wanted to just step away from the conventional, and he wanted something different. He wanted a clamshell. He wanted something that you touch. Like, the ideas that we were born of the DS were because of him. Now, the Wii, you know, the motion sensing technology was brought to Nintendo, but Iwata was the one behind it that said, all right, let's do this, you know, and those are things that were because of Iwata, and it's hard to say if he wasn't president at the time, would Nintendo have gone in that direction? You know, it's hard to know, but I would like to think that it wouldn't have. I like to think that he was the reason that Nintendo took the approach that they took to games, design, hardware. Like, they opened up so many interesting doors that otherwise, you know, we would have never have seen, maybe.
Just, you know, the willingness to innovate and the, actually, the driving desire to innovate. Not just the willingness, but Nintendo's just like, you know what? We're going to be different. Get used to it. We're going to give you what you didn't know you wanted, basically. I kind of like to put it that way. But, so Bradley, how did you grow up with Nintendo? Like, how did your fandom kind of come about?
Well, I grew up with a Super Nintendo that we no longer have, sadly. Played a lot of Super Mario World with my brother and cousin. I have a lot of good memories about that. Just finding all the different secrets, getting to the secret world, the Star World, I think it was. Oh, yeah. And with all the different colored Yoshis, awesome. And also, I have a good memory. My grandma had an NES and a Super Nintendo, of all things. And we used to play, you ever played Sunset Riders? You ever heard of that game?
Nope.
No.
It's like a Western...
Oh,
I think it was an
I remember this.
Light bulb.
Yeah, it was an arcade game, I believe.
Uh-huh. It's a beat-em-up, right?
Kind of.
Okay.
Well, shooting.
Shooting,
yeah, but you're a cowboy.
But it's 2D side-scrolling, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I have good memories playing with my grandma with that. That's a lot of fun.
Wait, your grandma actually played the game?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, man. Best grandma ever.
And The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. That was a big game for me. I never... It took me so long to beat it, though. It's just the world of that game just really captivated me, I guess.
That's how it is. That's how it was, I guess, for just about anybody, or everybody, I think.
Yeah.
Such a big jump compared to, like, everybody loved, you know, Link to the Past. And now not only did you have Link to the Past, but you also had, you know, a 3D version of it that you could go and explore. Mind blown.
Yep. It was a really tough game.
It is, actually. I mean, I tried to, you know, get... Okay, so I had a friend come over and I was trying to get him to play that game because he said he might be interested in going into game design because I think he liked playing Madden.
Oh, boy.
Yep, he was that type. So I was like, well, Ocarina of Time is considered one of the best video games of all time, so you should try it out. So I, you know, brought him over to my house and we tried it out and... He couldn't even figure out how to move around effectively. Like, he couldn't figure out how to, you know, he'd fall off of big old platforms on accident and so on and so forth. And it made me realize, like, not only is it, like, the puzzle solving and the trying to figure out where to go next that's difficult, but it's also just moving around that can be difficult for some people. So that was kind of an interesting experience. But yeah, I was pretty much the same way with Ocarina of Time. One of my all-time favorites for sure. So, and I started mentioning this a little earlier, but it's probably the reason that I prefer 3D Zelda games to 2D Zelda games, like, a lot. Like, I've gone back and tried to play some 2D Zelda games and just not really enjoyed myself much at all, but...
Yeah, same.
Yeah. One of these days I'll put the time in, hopefully.
Minish Cap, right?
Yep, that's kind of what we're looking at for our next Game of the Month Club. So, yeah. What about more recent, though, Bradley? You know, with the DS, the Wii, even the Game Boy Advance. The Game Boy Advance was huge for me when I was a little younger.
Game Boy Advance. I remember the old Game Boy. Oh, that's old school. Okay, something more recent. Just getting the Wii U, bringing it home, and the 3DS, buying it myself. It was really nice. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a big point I think that's a big turning point as a Nintendo fan is when you go from, you know, getting gifts as a child, you know, from your parents and stuff like that to actually getting them, you know, with your own money, you know, like waiting outside in the cold and sleeping in my car in front of a Best Buy so that I could buy a Wii with my own money that I made from a job was pretty awesome. I mean, it's pretty cool to say, like, this isn't just like my family's or anything, like, this is mine. This I bought this, I own this, like, I'm gonna buy games and I'm gonna play it when I want to play it. Like, it's just kind of that cool little I feel like just a turning point at least a little bit.
I can agree with that as well, but with me it's always getting packages in the mail. Don't know about you guys, but
oh yeah, it's like a present, man.
Yeah, it is. It's nice getting
opening the box
mail. Yeah. So I'm guessing that's kind of how it is with you too, Bradley, then.
Yeah.
Yay for Amazon.
Yeah. I can see why people get addicted to online shopping.
Yep. So, yeah, it is kind of, it's that like high, like getting a package in the mail and opening it. And it almost does give you a high. I actually ordered Zelda Skyward Sword was a game that I really, really, really wanted to play, man. The months leading up to that release, like, were just... a killer to me. I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know what else to play because all I wanted to play was Skyward Sword. So I ordered it and it came way late. I was hoping it'd come on my birthday, which was a week after it was released. But it didn't come until 2 days, no, 3 days after that. But I do remember, like, I had gone to the post office and checked in my post office box so many times leading up to that moment. I had checked, okay, Monday morning, I checked and it wasn't there. And then in the evening when I was done working at my job, I thought, you know what? I think sometimes they deliver the mail in the afternoon. That's a once in a blue moon type thing. But I was willing to give it a shot. So I go, the post office is all lit up against like the darkness outside. So I walk in there, it's totally empty and totally, like, it's so clinical in that post office, clinical and sterile, you know, that's kind of how I describe it. It's almost hospital-like. So I walk down that lonely hall I pull open our post office box. And I, yeah, that's exactly how it was. I seriously, like, my heart almost skipped a beat. I was like, is that it? Like, I didn't know. I saw my name on there, and then I saw Amazon, and I was all like, this can't be it. There's no way. I've been waiting for it for too long. But it was it, and I went home, and I just played that game all night. So that's one specific memory of mine.
I had a friend that worked at a Hollywood Video. Well, I used to work at Hollywood Video. He started when I worked there, and then I left, and he stayed working there. And the DSi was coming out, and they got their shipment, I knew, 5 days, you know, before the day they were going to sell stuff, they would get their stuff. So I went in 5 days early, and I was like, so am I going to pick this up today? And he's like, do you want it today? And I'm like, yes, I want it today. So I got a DSi 5 days early. Whoa. And I know that's, I thought it was pretty awesome. I thought it was really cool. And then also Mario Kart, I got that like 3 days early, and I did nothing but play Mario Kart for the Wii for 3 days straight. I kid you not. Like, nothing else in the world meant anything to me. Like, I, all night, all day, everything in the world, I just played Mario Kart.
That's pretty Dang. Awesome.
I got to be number one on,
Time Trials?
Yeah, on Time Trials for the Ghost, I can't remember which one the Ghost House is called now, for the Wii. It's the retro-inspired one. I can't think of the exact name, but I was number one in the world for 2 weeks.
Whoa.
That is my accomplishment in life, okay? It's all that matters, everybody. I did it.
That is cool. I must admit.
Yes, it was awesome. And then everyone learned how to cheat, so it didn't matter.
Ugh.
Even before then, I lost pretty quickly. Like, every day I checked, like, there was somebody just, like, inching closer. And then once I got, like, knocked out of the top, then I got knocked into the 5th, and then the 10th, and then the 20th, and, like, I could never touch it again. Like, I had just a really, really amazing run that was perfect.
Thank goodness All for right. catches.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which weren't a big thing for the Wii, sadly.
No, not at all.
I remember with Skyward Sword, they had that game-breaking bug that they discovered, like, after the game Jeez. Came out. And you had to, like, download a separate piece of software in order to patch that game. That was kind of insane.
Or you could send yeah. your Wii to Nintendo, and they would fix it for you.
And the download seemed a little more practical to me.
Yeah.
Any other memories that we have? Getting mail, playing a specific game, looking forward to a game? Like right now, currently, the game that I'm looking forward to so much that I almost feel debilitated is Fire Emblem Fates. Has anybody... Okay. I mean, I'm not the only one who's felt that before, am I?
No. What was it? Like Splatoon? I was so jacked and excited for Splatoon. You know, Smash Brothers for the Wii U and 3DS. Mario Kart as well, obviously. When it came to the Wii, I loved there was a game called No More Heroes. Did either of you guys play No More Heroes?
No, but I know about it.
Okay, so then when I heard that they were making a sequel to this game, I was first, like, shocked. And then when I learned about it, I was like, yes, like, I have to have this game. That was another one I was super excited for.
Steven Touchdown or something like that, right?
Travis Touchdown.
Travis yeah. Touchdown.
Close enough.
Yeah. Probably one of the games I was most hyped for was Twilight Princess. It actually made me go out and get a GameCube. Because up until that point, I didn't have a GameCube.
Oh,
so
really?
I missed out on a bunch of games.
Wow, yeah.
Well, it's kind of the same way. It's understandable when you're as young as us. I keep bringing that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. Twilight Princess was pretty awesome. The Wii in general. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, the Wii in general. I remember waiting for it to come out, especially when I was, like, sitting there, like, in the... you know, in the parking lot, like, literally reading Nintendo Power, right? Like, I'm reading Nintendo Power, sitting there waiting for, you know, sunrise to come up so I can go get in line so I can possibly get a Wii. Like, the feeling of just waiting was, like, outrageously, like, uncontainable to me, right? Like, I just wanted it so badly. I unboxed it inside of my car as I was driving home.
Nintendo totally hyped that system like nobody's business.
Just so I could hold it.
There's like none at launch.
Yeah. I've already told my story about how we got a Wii randomly at an Alco. So yay for Alco.
My gamer grandma actually got one for us.
Wow.
So.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That will never cease to surprise me and amaze me that your grandma played video games with you.
Pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. She plays the Wii a lot.
Huh. I guess I shouldn't be too surprised. I think a lot of old people got that system. Just because of the way it was advertised, funny enough. Kind of moving on to the DS a little bit. A DS memory that I have is, I don't remember if I bought a DS with my own money. I might have had some help, but I was pretty young at the time and didn't really have much in the way of my own money, so I might have paid some for my DS. I got a black DS Lite. That system, man, I had it for so long. And I played Pokemon. Okay, that was like, I'm pretty sure that's the only game I owned for the DS. That might be an exaggeration, but I could just, you know, buy a system, get a Pokemon game, and be good with just Pokemon, probably, for the entire time that I own that system. And that's how it was for the DS for me. So I have a lot of kind of fondness for the DS Lite, classic DS Lite system.
Yeah, that's as far as I went with the DS. I only got a DS Lite. I never got a DSi or anything like that.
Nor did I.
I never got the DSi XL, but I did get a DSi, and I love the DSi. DS Lite is a great system as well. Even the original DS is fat, ugly, but beautiful at the same time.
oh, my goodness.
The Game Boy Advance, so me and my brother both had, we had one Game Boy Advance, right? And we had Tony Hawk and a few other games. I don't remember which all we had, but I just really remember Tony Hawk 2. Pro Skater 2 for the Game Boy Advance. We loved that game. My mom owned a restaurant, and because she owned a restaurant, we got to go to food conventions. So we went to a food convention up in Boise, I believe, and they were raffling off prizes. And one of the things they were raffling off was a Game Boy Advance. So we somehow won that raffle. So now me and my brother both had our own Game Boy Advances, and that was awesome.
That is awesome, man. It's kind of like Bradley winning his Greninja Amiibo.
On Twitter.
Winning stuff's always cool.
Yep, pretty much. All right. Again, with the Game Boy Advance, for me, it was all Pokemon all the time, so...
I do remember some Pokemon. I remember... Boy, what Game Boy Advance games did I just, like, fall in love with besides... Oh, Dragon Ball Z. They had... So they had Dragon Ball Z Legacy of Goku, Dragon Ball Z Legacy of Goku 2, and then they had Boo's Fury. They had GT Transformations. They had a really, really good fighting game called Supersonic Warriors, and then they had a really, really bad fighting game called Tanoshka or some weird crap. but Dragon Ball Z games on the Game Boy Advance were my jam. Wrestling games on the Game Boy Advance were also my jam, like Survivor Series, Road to WrestleMania, and I believe there's one more. I don't know what that one was called, but Fire Pro Wrestling, I've talked about that before, I believe, is an amazing wrestling series, especially for the Game Boy Advance. Oh boy, there's so many cool Game Boy Advance games as well, for sure.
It's remarkable to think that all those types of games actually came out on that tiny little system, not the best graphics ever, and yet such good graphics. I love sprites, you know, I love sprite-based graphics, but that's a remarkable little system. The game library is incredible, so.
Oh yeah, going back to playing those systems though, the screens are so tiny.
Tiny.
I know. They're like microscopic.
Compared to your new Nintendo 3DS XL.
Yeah.
My Game Boy Micro is so tiny. It's so small. It's crazy. Like, it feels in my hands. It's tiny. It's crazy. And the screen is literally like 2.5 inches. It's tiny.
I know.
Yep.
It's crazy.
But it's also awesome.
Tiny little system. Yep.
The Game Boy Micro is the best handheld system ever made.
I'm sure not everybody would agree with that.
Then everybody's wrong.
To each his own.
No, I'm right, Polly.
Hey, I have one too. I'll have you know, and I do like it. The screen's nice and bright, but that's about all I can say about it.
The screen is surprisingly amazing, right?
Yeah, it is.
The Advance SP was awesome.
Yeah, I've got two of those actually. So
that was my jam.
I never got an SP.
Oh, you poor deprived soul.
Deprived?
No more playing in the light. You can just play in the dark. It's awesome.
Were both of you a part of that generation where you literally had to try and find a light source to be able to play your Game Boy?
Yeah, we also had the little peripherals. You just plug in. It was a little light source.
How did we ever play any video game ever? To be honest, like, I have an original Game Boy Advance, and I tried to play it one day, even in the light, and it looks like crap. It looks bad. Like, not even playable. It's weird. Like, it's
I don't know.
I don't know how we put up with that. Jeez, we're so scarred in our young lives.
Well, I actually didn't grow up with a whole lot of handheld. The first handheld that I ever like owned myself was a Game Boy Color that lasted maybe a month or two before I got it stolen.
Ugh. Oh.
But then I got a Game Boy Advance SP, which was lit up backlit, and so I didn't have a problem with that. But I do have, you know, these memories of like looking across the street, kind of diagonal from me across the street, lived this kid who would sit out on his porch and play his Game Boy all the time. He loved Pokemon, so I do have that memory at least.
Oh man, I go all the way back to the original Game Boy, the green tint, and you can like change the brightness. It was like a, I don't know what it was.
You could change the contrast, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was the contrast.
Wow, that is pretty old school.
Of the, yeah, the original Game Boy?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
There's like a slider for the contrast and also the volume.
That is, if you want to play Pokemon the right way, Holly, you need to go get yourself a big brick Game Boy and get yourself Pokemon Blue or Red or Yellow.
Yellow. And Tetris.
Oh, yeah, the fat Game Boy.
Oh, I these days. If I could find a Game Boy, I would buy a Game Boy today. That reminds me, I think I'm going to be buying some pretty cool swag actually tonight. Ooh, I might have something exciting tomorrow.
So look forward to that next week. But I think that pretty much, and I do have to go to work soon. This is an unusual recording time for us. So that brings us to the end of our podcast. Don't forget about our giveaway. Our next one is for SteamWorld Dig for the 3DS. Woo! We've got two download codes for that. We also have some Wii download codes, but that's going to be a future giveaway. So like I say, we're just getting better and better and better in our giveaways. Again, this is North America only. If you feel like you have a North American friend who you could give the code to, don't hesitate to still enter the contest. All you have to do is send us an email at podcast@nintendofever.com or tweet any one of us. I'm at Holly Falmouth.
I'm at Only Matt Dezen. Please hit me up on Twitter. I will talk to you and talk to me about Tiny Galaxy and physical copies available for sale and digital. Plus, the game is live right now on the Nintendo eShop. So go and check it out. Tiny Galaxy. Hashtag Tiny Galaxy. Hashtag Tiny Galaxy.
And I am at... I'm at Bradley Craig, and you can ask me what I had for breakfast.
Hey, what'd you have for breakfast, Bradley?
A cup of coffee.
Oh, okay. Nothing nutritious at all.
Nope.
Sounds good.
All right. You can also tweet at Nintendo Fever. That's the Twitter handle to the site as a whole. Also, check out our written content on Nintendo Fever. We've got a lot of great stuff. We just added a new writer to the site, Colin Crowder, who has been really awesome about getting news out, you know, promptly and frequently. And so please do check out our written content at nintendofever.com. Also, please, those of you who are listening and can do this, if it's at all possible, please go to iTunes and give us a score, and a written review would be amazing. Super helpful, so please go do that if you have the time and the willingness. For now, though, thank you so much for listening to episode 21 of the Nintendo Fever podcast. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you later.
Later, Gators.
Bye.